Rabbi Eli Rubin, Parshas Pinchas, Parshas Sher, Thursday night, July 9th.
Parshas Pinchas is very underrated. And it really, you know, the Ramban, the Ramban starts with a sequence of Parshiot and demonstrates that Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership was on the decline. And he checks it, of course, from Parshat Baalotcha.
Do you have any more?
He starts from Baalotcha on, and you can see...
Two more. Not one.
Just in big terms, that Parshat Shlach, after people lost confidence in Moshe in Baalotcha with the Slav and with the... although Moshe saw this as a benefit, but Eldad and Medad in the position of leadership, it did begin to weaken a little bit of the image. And then Parshat Shlach, when Moshe's strategy, I think, it's not as if I can identify it, but his strategy was to, the reason why he sent diplomats and heads of tribes, he didn't send spies, as we all know, as Yehoshua did a little later on, because you have to look at the intent. You can retrofit this. If he sent diplomats, it means he wanted to make a case about Israel, which he thought that people were not believing. He didn't ever doubted the ability of the Jewish people to conquer the land or should be conquered, but really wanted to come back and make arguments for, and obviously they went and took against. And then he lost even more of his leadership ability in Parshat Shlach, which of course leads to Parshat Korach, which is a rebellion, because as well, Moshe is really weak, and Ramban points this out, with the weakness of Moshe's leadership, and Korach stepped into the vacuum. Balak is a continuation of looking out from the outside, how our enemies perceive us. Now, of course, we won the battles in Parshat Shlach. It's also interesting that when you get to Shlach and Korach, the battles of Jewish people fought were particularly the ones in Korach, or ones that we were instigated. We didn't instigate, we were provoked. And yet, you look at Balak, he said that, oh, we're so afraid of the Jews, they're lachachat, they're going to wipe us out, look what they've done to everyone else. Well, it's so modern history playing out, how history just changes its perception in the moment. We live in a time now where history changes as it unfolds, let alone there's nothing objective. So Balak is really looking at it from the outside and saying, okay, well, the Jews, piece of weakness of leadership, let's go ahead and attack from a different perspective, because the military vehicles didn't work. And then, of course, at the end of Balak, we end up with yet another attack on the Jewish people, and this one is through licentiousness and through an unethical behavior, which is the core of the Jewish people, of Matov Olecha Yaakov, Mishkan Adachi Yisrael. So there really is one long, nice sequence. And when you get to Parshat Pinchas, something very interesting happens. So because we've had a sequence of weeks where the leadership of the Jewish people seems to be in a decline, it's not by accident that Zimri stands up in front of all the Jewish people and provokes Moshe. And of course, look at the Medrash. Zimri said that it was Moshe married a Midianite. He also could marry a Midianite. So it was a direct affront to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is part of this pattern of decline that started all the way from Parshat Baalotcha. We have a tendency of looking at Parshiot as individual units and modules because we lay them once a week on Shabbos. At least we do a whole Parsha. I think the conservatives do, it takes them 3 years to finish it. We have at least a better perspective of the overall picture of the Torah. But it's very important to see this in the sequence of events, what took place. And Pinchas stands up, and Moshe Rabbeinu not remembering, and I'm not going to go into that whole medrash that Moshe did remember the halacha, and it's hard to understand how he didn't understand the halacha, so there are commentators who explain it. But then when you get to Pinchas who stands up, it's a new leader. And Parshat Pinchas is the fertile ground of the new leadership of the Jewish people. And if you look at what happens in Parshat Pinchas, there's a bit of a change. There's an exciting turnaround after all of these weeks of turmoil. First we have Pinchas who stands up with great fortitude and courage, and Pinchas was a Kanai, and it was something that only Pinchas can do. And Elazar becomes the Kohen, Benot Slavchad, in this part, follows up, and they advocate for themselves very respectfully, not in an undermining way, not in a way that would take away from Moshe's his ability to lead, and they demonstrate great leadership. And then after all of that, we come to the following week against the Pesukim. So now you can take out your notes. That was just a bit of an introduction. So if you take out your notes, and the reason I brought my Malbim, I have more if you need it, is because the Malbim didn't make it to the cut. It went to press, and then I forgot the Malbim, so we'll get to it. So if you look at the Parsha, the Natati, so right after the sequence of Benot Slavchad, and I'll explain why there's a connection between it in a moment. So Benot Slavchad takes place, And he gives them Eretz Yisrael, and they want a Nachala in Eretz Yisrael. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, "Vayomer Shemoshe Alei El Har Avarim, Urei Ta Aretz Asher Natati Bnei Yisrael. You're going to go look at the land that I'm going to give to Eretz Yisrael. V'ra'ita Ota V'nesafta Alamecha Gamata Kasher Nesafa Arvichicha Kasher Ritem Pimit Barzin Like Dishene Heim Meim Riva Kodesh Min Zogai." Once again, God just throws it right out there, almost in his face. Take a look at Eretz Yisrael. You're not going in. So he gives away the land to Bnei Slavchad. He's reminded again he's not going in. Now look at the next sequence of Psukim. Fascinating. Vayidaber Moshe al Hashem lemor. So Moshe initiates, it's in Pasuk Tet Zayin, it's on your page. Moshe initiates these words. Vayidaber Adosh Moshe al Hashem lemor. Yifkod Hashem elokei rucho l'chol basar. God should remember, or should Yifkod, if you ever have to the English translate Yifkod?
Appoint.
Yifkod elokei Hashem elokei rucho l'chol basar. Appoint a leader for all. Now look at the way that Moshe describes God. Elokei rucho. I'm not by far a biblical expert from the university world, but I don't believe that this is referred to, again, I'm going to say often, in the Chumash, in the Tanakh, that God is described as Elokei rucho. We're going to come back to that. L'chol basar, ish, you know where it's, you have a place?
No.
Okay, I'm very careful, because I really can't, I didn't look it up.
It's not a Chumash.
I don't know, maybe it's in
the back. Is it one of the Hoshanas?
It's close to you. Hoshanas doesn't count.
That's where they get it from.
Piyutim don't count either.
I didn't say it.
When a piyutim gets, the only thing I say in piyutim is a sigh. I said, really? You were saying piyutim? That's about as close as I get to saying a piyutim.
That's?
Well, the morale is very against piyutim. That was my first love for the morale when I came across it. It was against the piyutim. I said, I'm going to like this guy. I figured the morale and I can have a nice long history together. Yifkod Hashem elokei rucho l'chol basar, ish al eida. A man on the Eidah, now again, the Eidah, you know, for those of you who study Chumash, you know that Eidah usually connotes negative. Matai Eidah, Razod, how long is this going to continue going on? We'll come back to that. Asher Yetzei Lefneim, Asher Yavol Lefneim, who will go out in front of them and will also go min in front of them. Asher Yotziim, who will take them out, Asher Yotziim, and who will bring them out. V'lo Tiyeh Adat Hashem Kitzon, Asher Ein Lehem Ro'ah. And he should not be like a flock of sheep that doesn't have a shepherd. And I should Vayomer Hashem Moshe Kachachad Yeshua Benon Hashem Ruach Bo B'Semachtir V'Alav. Now, if you read this, would you read into this? Is there anything you want to read into it before we even start scraping all the layers off of this? Because it's really a fascinating three sequence of Sukkah. And anything, because I guarantee anything you say, somebody has said it already. And if not, you should say it anyway. Because yes.
Elokei Ruchot, is that related to Yoshua
Ben-Ish, Asher? Very good point. Excellent. Excellent. So there's a symmetry. So my mother told me, who quoted Rav Kook, and I don't have Otsro Tariya, there's a book that they put out many years ago that indexes all the Rav Kook's comments, the major ones. I don't have that in my home library. My mother told me that this morning. She quoted Rav Kook that said that Elokei Ruchot is... a leader has to, and we'll see it in Rashi in a moment. It's interesting how you can really, if you have a sensitivity to this, you can read a lot into Rashi. Elokei Ruchot is the person who understands the nature of people. And Elokei Ruchot is the God of all people. That there's an inclusivity, that when a leader is not just the leader of one prototype of a certain a module, a certain mold of a person, but a leader has to understand the complexity of society. Elokei Ruchot. Rav Shapiro, who was my Rosh Hashiva, used to say that's the difference between a Rosh Hashiva and a Rav. A Rosh Hashiva really understands a limited spectrum of a community because he's dealing with like-minded people in a yeshiva as much as that can be. A Rav of a community is someone who understands a broader spectrum of society. And he said that for that reason in Europe, Rosh Hashivas never gave Psak Halacha. So it was always the Rabbanei Ha'ir, who probably knew less than Rosh Hashivas, were the ones who gave Psak Halacha because the Rosh Hashivas by themselves, they recused themselves, recognizing that they weren't Elokei Ruchot. And Elokei Ruch is someone who could understand wide spectrum, which brings us to Rashi in a moment and brings us to Pinchas. The reason why Moshe, some want to say, was concerned was because Moshe, because there was a couple of ways to look at this. Moshe was concerned that Pinchas would be appointed the leader. That's why it's in Pasha Pinchas. That was what provoked him. He said, if Pinchas would be appointed leader, Pinchas certainly showed leadership qualities of taking control, But he was so narrow in his ability to lead that he'll alienate or disenfranchise huge swaths of the community. So it has to be Elokei Ruchot, Ish Yisher Ruach Bo, someone who can understand the temperament and personalities of the people he's leading. And if you look at Rashi, it's interesting, you can even see it. I put a little arrow there. I don't know, without that introduction, I don't know if it's as noticeable. Take a look at Rashi Q Yotzei. Asheruachbo, right. Asheruachbo, Shalt, Shuchal haloch keneged rucho shal kol achad ve'achad. That a leader, it's the second arrow on the other side. It's not, I'm not doing it in order because the question came up. Sheruach shal kol achad ve'achad. So the first definition of the characteristics of a leader is someone who can, as best as possible, understand or empathize with the people whom he's leading. We're going to come back to a little later.
Not Kenegan. Not the other meaning of Kenegan.
Well, Ezer Kenegdo, you're saying.
No, I mean, just that can go and contend with all of them. I was just saying, no, I got all of you listen to me.
I'm the right way, everybody's wrong. Right. Well, that wouldn't fit into this interpretation.
I know.
But I'll tell you where it can fit in, because the Malbim says there's something odd that if you look at the symmetry of the Pasuk, Asher Yetzei Lefneim, Asher Yavo Lefneim, and one in that first phrase, it's Moshe, the leader is going out and coming in front of them. The second phrase is her Yotziyim Yasher Yiviyim. He's taking them out and he's bringing them in. So one is with a sense of collaboration, it seems, and one is a sense of force. So there really is a leader, and the Malbim says a leader has to demonstrate different qualities depending on the circumstances. And there's some commentaries that go and say a little bit more modern that look at it and say that a part of a leadership of a problem is that when leaders become pollsters and they lead by popular sentiment, then they lose the quality of Asher Yotziyim V'Asher Yiviyim. People in leadership positions have to make very difficult decisions. They can't always look and see who's following them. My grandfather, Irving Bunim, used to comment on the Pasuk, on the Mamar Chazal, that Pnei Hador K'Pnei HaKelev. You know, it's the Ikvah, the Mashiach. Mashiach is coming when it's Pnei Hador K'Pnei HaKelev. The generation is like the face of a dog. So how does that make any sense? Obviously, it's very metaphoric. So it says that a dog, although goes ahead of the master and walk, is always attached to a leash and is looking behind him. So he's being held back by the master, even though it appears that the dog is leading, the dog isn't leading. So Pnei Hador K'Pnei HaKelev, you know, the Ikvah Mashiach is coming when the leaders are the leading dogs. I don't mean to take the metaphor to its extreme about that they're leading dogs, but in that sense. So you were right. So there is a way to look at Keneged as more than just this kind of collaboration, understanding, and empathy and appreciation, but also a little bit more of tough leadership decisions during difficult times. Interesting that most of the commentaries look at Asher Yotziyim Yashir V'Yim as a concept of war and battle. But before we get to that, I want to show you another Rashi, which I have to confess, had I not seen Yishayel Leibowitz's commentary on the Chumash, I wouldn't have understood this Rashi to the same extent. I have to say to Yishayel Leibowitz with some degree of hesitation, there are some people who would feel offended by Yishayel Leibowitz's commentary being included in the same page of all the great Rishonim and Achronim. So if that's you, I apologize. I don't mean to offend your sensibilities of where he belongs on the spectrum of scholarship. He was certainly a very controversial person, and people had some extreme things to say about him. But I'm not going to say any of them. I just want to point out what he comments about Rashi, although he doesn't reference it. Take a look at the Rashi. The first, you see where it says CYL, the little arrow? Asher Yiviyim, the first page. Asher Yiviyim, Shelo Tasel Lo. Shelo, you see it's the first page. So it's the first arrow, one we skipped. Asher Yiviyim. And you'll bring them in. And remember, this came after the sequence that Moshe was told that he can't bring the Jewish people into Canaan. Asher Yiviyim, Shelo Tasel Lo. Don't do to that leader what you did to me. I brought this Eda all the way to this point, and God, look at you did. You took it away from me. So Yishael Leibowitz, when he looks at this, I have Yishael Leibowitz, it's copied on the second page, it's the third paragraph. He says the following. Nakel Sha'er, it's the third paragraph. It's one could easily guess or estimate or just surmise kia bitui v'asher yotziyim v'asher yiviyim migalel lanu et mirut libo. This is Moshe's bitterness. Shamnam zachahu lahotzi et ha'am ulam nigzor alav shelo lav yem al aretz. So Moshe's comment is a response to God's previous comment in the pasuk right before this, that no, you're not bringing them into Eretz Yisrael. So when God, Moshe says, okay, so who is the leader? He is able to introduce or embed, subtly or maybe not so subtly, a form of protest. That was an interesting, maybe a little bit hidden in that little sequence. Interesting, Masil Yisharim, if you take a look at the Masil Yisharim. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure I lose my notes. Take a look at the Masil Yisharim. You wouldn't expect to see this in the Masil Yisharim. It's interesting that it's here. Ki Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ohev Lemi Sheohev Yisrael. A leader is a person is only going to be loved if he loves Am Yisrael. B'chol Mashal Magdil Avatol Yisrael, Gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magdil Love. The more a person loves Am Yisrael, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves this person. Ve'elohim Aroim Amitiyim Shel Yisrael, Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Chafetz Behem Harbeh, Shemosrim Atzmam Al Tzono. So look what's happening here, because we didn't get to this point. The Masil Yisharim is referencing the metaphor of the sheep and the shepherd. We're going to come back to this right now. Shemosrim atzmam al tzonam, v'dorshimu mishtadlim al shlomam v'tovatam b'chol edrachim. And they're always looking on their behalf. You know, Rav Kook signs his letters, many of them, Eved La'amo. A leader has to be completely committed, even to the extent of his own detriment to the people. And when leaders lose sight, when Moshe said to Lo chamor achad nasati, remember when Korach accused him? He said, Lo chamor achad nasati. I think that's the buzzer. I didn't even take one chamor. Rashi says that, I think it was Rashi on the Netziv, says that when he went from Midian to Mitzrayim, he could have used a company car. he could have used a limousine. He said he took his own donkey to get from Midian to Canaan. I would never take anything that didn't belong to me. So he said that he'd completely abdicate himself as a leader, and that's who a leader that he loves.
Describing yourself, Moshe said, Kasher Yisa Omen is Hayonik.
Right.
Using the tone Roe analogy. Right. Seems to be even more selfless.
Right, correct. Which one do you think is more selfless?
I think Omen is Hayonik.
Omen is Hayonik is more? I don't know. I could maybe argue, possibly, that Omen Yonek is a lot of visceral satisfaction of raising a child. I don't know if you get that same type of connectivity to raising sheep. Not that I would know, because I'm originally from the Bronx, and there weren't that many sheep around in the Parkway when I grew up. There was one area where it was rocky, but there was...
Do you have any sheep in the borough for?
Yep, chickens, my grandpa.
You had chickens?
Yeah, back in the 30s or 20s. You know.
Barbacoa chickens?
It was different back then.
Yeah, silly.
Not kapars.
Not kapars. So this is what didn't make it to the cut, is the malba. So you're really asking me a question, begs the question, where did this sheep, shepherd thing come from? If we already had kaseyamon et onik, and we say al-kanfein et sharon, we have all these different animal metaphors, the loving metaphors. How did we get to the sheep metaphor? Of a name of yoke. So the Malbim says something really very interesting. I wish I could read it to you, but I don't want to lose you. You know what?
The Nevi'im who are referring to Moshe's Aron.
Okay, so that's, I think it's a very good point that all of the Avot and David HaMelech and Moshe, Yosef, all started out as a shepherd. So I think that's a very good answer. In fact, I would add a layer to this, that a shepherd, and this I really appreciate very much, because sometimes I have to be very careful about this in leadership roles. A shepherd has to be equally as attentive to the individual sheep as he or she is to be to the entire flock. There are some leaders that really express themselves and they lead very well on a mass level. But if you drill down on an interpersonal level, they're missing components that can relate to a person in a meaningful way. And then there are some leaders that are very strong interpersonally, but when I put them in a room or put them in front of an audience, and they just don't seem to command the attention and the admiration of a crowd. And you can probably think of different types of people that crossed your paths over your lifetime, and you can maybe quantify these types of leaders. A ro'eh is interesting that a ro'eh does both. A ro'eh has to worry about the individual sheep, and the ro'eh also has to worry about the flock. And that's what makes a Ruah so special, and that would explain why the Ruah is the constant metaphor of leadership, because you have to learn a lot of empathy. And I think, getting back to your comment, I think if a person can show love to sheep, then it's almost like a kavachomer, you can show love to people. Although, I have to say, it's easier sometimes dealing with sheep than it is with people. I've been dealing in schools for many decades already, and I always say as a joke, that my next job is being an orphanage, because I think that's just going to solve 80% of the problems. Of course, it doesn't solve, it creates new problems, but at least some of those long email exchanges would probably go away. There's one parent who always writes to me. So I finally came, I said, I write my long, and then it goes back. People don't work that many hours, they can write emails. I finally said to the person, I said, if you need to continue this conversation, we should meet in person, which of course is a killer, because that's not the objective. The objective is to, it's a war of attrition, is to wear you down until you make a mistake in some of the sentences, and then they pounce on you. That's all it is. That's what this email war is about. So, of course, that always ends it, but it ends in a way that creates discontent, because it's not what they were looking for. But that's why, and I said, well, I'd be very happy to meet with you in person. Of course, being very happy is a bit of an exaggeration. the Malbim says the following. I really like what he said, because I had not thought of it. The concept you said, the sheep, I think there's a lot of talking about it. This is the first time I've seen this. Kigam hatzon she'im em roeh yesh manhig. You can have a flock of sheep and not have a shepherd. Does anybody, I mean, you must have seen this visiting places where there are sheep walking around. There's a lead sheep that leads all the sheep. What is it?
A pack leader.
But that's not a leader. That's just another sheep who happens to be in front of the pack. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying is that if you look back at the pasuk, he says, "Lo tiadat Hashem kitzon asher ein lehem roeh." They're definitely going to go somewhere with the pack leader, but they need a roeh who can take them someplace, as opposed to having. In other words, putting it in more modern terms, a leader with vision, as opposed to a leader who just happens to be walking with the rest of the sheep. So these are the, if we were to write down, let's say, if we were to be taking notes on everything we mentioned, it start emerging from this is Moshe Rabbeinu's concept of leadership. Sher Yotziyim, Asher Yiviyim, someone who has to be connected, sometimes has to be empathic, someone has to understand the conglomerate, someone has to be empathy, someone has to be singular, someone has to be, it's really a tall list of someone, and if you think about it already, some want to say that at this point he was talking about his son. Because this is a parsha of Yerusha. Selafchad, Elazar became the Kohen Gadol, Pinchas was a form of Yerusha and Kohen, and almost Moshe Rabbeinu, some say, I don't really find it that much in the text, Moshe was hoping that Gershon would have been appointed as the leader, and if you look at the next pasuk, by Yomer Shem Moshe Kach Lecha et Yehoshua.
Where would you have seen anything about Gershon's qualities?
No. Well, that's why I don't see
that this is indicating that he's talking.
Even their names are being mentioned. This
right. That's why I don't see it. But it is contextually, it makes sense. Because this is the leadership transition, and most of it happens through. And therefore, so the corollary is true, even if you don't go to that extreme, that one other aspect of this is that leadership is not inherited. So if you don't take that point of view that he was really advocating for his own son, what you certainly do see is that you can't assume that leadership is part of a genetic material. Which of course would fly in the face of the whole concept of Hasidic leadership. That couldn't work, because in the Hasidic community, and actually in the Rosh Yeshiva community. I'm sure those who follow Rosh Yeshiva, I mean, follow the major yeshivas, I'm not talking about little, you know, kolos in this little community, that community, that the children of Rosh Yeshivas ultimately, or many of them become Rosh Yeshivas themselves. I was going on in Lakewood, how many generations of kolos already? I don't know if they got kolos tests to see if they knew what Rav Aaron Kotler knew. It just was an assumed leadership.
Maybe it's the other way around, although I don't know my tabach that well, in that he was actually thinking of Yehoshua. And so things that Yehoshua has done up till now, supporting Moshe,
right.
Or the Meraglim, where he held back while Kalev is the one who Vayahas, you know, but he was the one.
Low mash VPO.
So maybe it's exactly the person he had in mind was not Yeshua Bar. He really had Yeshua Bar.
Absolutely.
But he needed God to say it.
Absolutely. And God actually, V'samachti Yado Olav. And in fact, God says that we're not going to be able to get this. We don't have enough time. It says, V'samachti Yado Olav. You should put your hand on it. If you look carefully, and this is again the brilliance of Rashi, Moshe put both hands on Yehoshua. And Rashi comments that he did it with such a full heart. Getting back to your point, why would I assume that he was advocating for his son? He did it more than he was even asked to do. But Yehoshua did have some faults. And Moshe could have been sensitive to him. For instance, when Eldad and Medad mitna bimba machaneh, it doesn't say who, but there was a nar and said, Klaim, put them in jail. We assume the nar is Yehoshua. So Yehoshua was a little bit too protective of Moshe. And also there's another fault that's pointed out in Yehoshua's growth as an emerging leader, is that when Moshe did come down from Har Sinai, he said, Kol milchama, was it? Kol... And, you know, he was very willing just to sweep it all away and say that one voice of desperation, as opposed to, you know, this is also true in leadership, but there isn't a one size fits all problem. There's no one size fits all solution. And if you make this just a generalization about all the people, then you're never going to be able to resolve and mitigate any issue. So maybe there could have been some hesitation on Moshe's side.
Yeah, but these incidents took place like 38 years ago.
Right, and he grew. So let's take the other side. Sebi ilachem el amalek. And this, we're going to get to that right now. Yehoshua was the paradigmatic leader. He was the one who went out and fought. You know, he was one who was chosen. B'chalachan anashim b'tzei lachem. You go out and you choose the people.
Maybe this is too simplistic, but couldn't that be shot in Elokei HaRuchot? That many leaders, you know, lack any of these qualities. David was nechbal. The Kalim, you're like, right, they don't inherently have these qualities. Moshe himself was refusing. Right. Wait a minute, he's so concerned with each individual, the last thing he would do is refuse Hashem, you know, multiple times. But once you have Elokei HaRuchot on your side, Hashem will infuse you with a broader
skill set.
Right.
Could be, support him. Right, that's true. I mean, you mentioned in Moshe Rabbeinu, if you look where Moshe started, Moshe's leadership actually started from the individual. Because he's Vayar Ki Einish, Vayachat HaMitzri, and what was the other one? He's Right. I mean, Moshe's whole leadership really started in Israel. Then he grew into. I think that's why Moshe was so reticent. I think he was comfortable being the adjudicator for justice on an individual level. I think Moshe didn't have to sort himself as looking this in general, and he had to grow into it. God had to take him there. All right. You mentioned David Melech. I want to make sure I have enough time for this because there's so much more to talk about.
I guess the question is, if we had level of nevuah and leadership, and how come we couldn't see that Yehoshua is capable of those things? Because he's making specific requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But, you know, so, Hashem, of course, you are going to choose. But here are the qualities I need. It sounds like the Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe.
These ones you should look for.
Yeah.
I think it would go back to Korach. I'll tell you why. Moshe and Aaron were accused of Srara, of taking the leadership. And he said that he was appointed by God. I think if you look at it from the positive and not from the negative, like I think most of us are leaning towards, Moshe was framing it that God would actually say, Kach of Yehoshua. So this way, no one would ever accuse Yehoshua of assuming the leadership by default or by from crooked method. So I think this was a protection. Everything that Moshe did now until the end of his life, if you go through Bamidbar, and there's a little hiatus in Devarim, but if you see all the engagement in Moshe and Yehoshua, you'll see how Moshe is setting Yehoshua up for success. Another sign of great leadership. Always, everything now to the end of his life is setting everybody up for success. Really, he was a remarkable person in that sense. I can spend more time on this, but it's almost like Ein Bit Midrash of Lo Chidush. I saw something which I thought was a very interesting comment maybe 2 years ago, and it doesn't mean because it was new for me, it would be new for you, so if it isn't, I apologize. But and if you heard it, then that's amazing that you heard it, because I'm old already and I've just heard it now. It's around 2 years ago. And suddenly I read it in one sefer, and then interestingly enough, I saw it I'm not saying if somebody is. I read it in a second sefer. I don't know how these things happen. I don't know who steals from whom. someone is doing a good job, because I can't imagine how these two books. Well, I can see the other one stealing it. But then,
Yeah, right.
I'm not giving you the names of the books. Sorry. Most of the stories here, most of the commentary. If you go, let's go back to that first Rashi. It's all about war. Bivatei Meshachin. Rashi in the first page. It's I skipped the first part because I just didn't want to photocopy another section. But it talks about the Umot Olam. I don't know where Rashi's source is other than the Gemara, but I don't know where it comes from. That the Umot Olam, they send in their soldiers and the commanders stay in the back. El Kamosha Siti Anishi Lechanti B'Sichon V'Og. Shenemar Al Tira Oto Kederach Shasa Yoshua Shenemar Vayelach Yoshua Elav Vayomlo Eleno Atav V'Chein B'David Umer Ki Yotzei Ubalif Nehem. Yotze Barosh v'nichnas Barosh. That a commanding officer, a Jewish commanding officer, fights in front of his soldiers. Acharei. And just to reinforce that, because you're going to need that, I have a very interesting quote here from Rav Aluf Chaim Barlev. Many of us remember Barlev from the defunct Barlev line in the Yom Kippur War, and don't really associate him with great heroics. But before he contributed to that debacle, he was the chief of staff of the Israeli army. So if you take a look at this quote, which is a quote from HaTzofeh, I couldn't find the original Tzofeh. I'm sure if I had more time and searching around the database, I could have gotten to it. So I just assume that this quote is correct. This is what Barlev said. Ani savur shehalichatam shel mifkadeinu habchirim yachad im ansheihem ha-makomot ha-sakana, that our commanding officers go to places of danger. Berosh ha-rishna bitui l'tchuna enoshit l'rama musarit. It's about the humanity and about the ethics of the Israeli army. Ani mamin ki uvda sheyesh lanu tzava, that we have an army ha-matzmiach mifakdim, who grow commanders ke'ela she-mehavim dugma ishit, that present a personal personal example, with their bravery, it's shaping the entire character of the army, and it's developing its spirit. It's one of the greatest revelations of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, is the Israeli officers who go out. And who here doesn't remember last year in the Gaza war when that Magad, who the Druze Magad from Golani, was wounded and he came back to battle 3 days later, all full of bandages to go back in Gaza. And he's part of the Druze section, but that was certainly typical of what we see. So I have something a little negative to add to this whole very positive, beautiful story, but I think it's an interesting insight. So we all know the story, many of us know the story of David HaMelech. I don't say all know, because we don't even feel bad and inadequate. It's okay if you don't know the story. David HaMelech, you know, it's a difficult story to understand, to say the least, that he went on the rooftop and he saw Bathsheba bathing, and he inquired about her, found out whose wife. She belonged to Uriah, sends Uriah to the he sleeps with her, sends Uriah, Uriah comes back from the front, gives Uriah a command to go home, Uriah doesn't go home, makes him a Moreh B'Malchut, that's how the Gemara explains it, he makes him rebelling against the king, he sends Uriah to the front, he tells the commanding officer of the Dovid Melech's army, make sure you put him in a place where he gets killed, and Uriah indeed gets killed, and then ultimately Bathsheba marries Dovid HaMelech, and their Shlomo is their son, who takes over the entire Yerusha. That's the story. So the Gemara says in more than one place, Kol mi she'omer David HaMelech choteh, eino ela toeh. It's hard to understand how to reconcile the Gemara. The Gemara says anyone who says David HaMelech sinned is making a mistake. It's hard to reconcile the reality versus the Gemara interpretation. So the simplest interpretation of that is that David HaMelech forced all the soldiers to give gittin before they went to war. So in case they were disobedient, they would know that every woman was divorced, so one way or the other. Many of the common Rav Meidan said this, and many, certainly not anything new, is that David HaMelech's life fell apart after that. Soon afterwards was Amnon and Tamar, and then Amnon ended up getting killed, and then David HaMelech didn't say anything, and then his son tried to take over the kingdom and slept with his wives. You look at David HaMelech's life afterwards, there's some who want to say that David HaMelech was, his life became completely upended when he demonstrated this lack of ethical behavior. So although he didn't sin, he cast himself in a way that his life would punish him. So that's a more modern way of looking at this story. But I came across a Malbim, and I'm going to make sure I have enough time.
13 minutes?
9:15.
Yeah, I think I'll make it. Yeah. Was it?
When Nathan came to him, he says,
right.
So, I mean, he did admit the...
Oh, he certainly admitted. There's no question. He admitted it was a very beautiful story. He was contrite and he was transparent. The whole metaphor that was given, there's no question. But from a human level, if you follow the narrative of David HaMelech's life, he never really regained stability afterwards. You could say it's not connected, but kind of a characterological level, you get to think something went wrong in David's life afterwards. He's a complicated person, David HaMelech. So here's an interesting model. Okay, I hope you're okay with this. Vayehi l'tshuvat Hashana. This is Perek Yud Aleph in Shmuel Bet. Vayehi l'tshuvat Hashana le'etzei tamlachim. And it was a very nice time of the year when kings go out and walk around. This is important. Vayishlach David et Yoav et Vavadav et Imo v'al kol Yisrael vayashchitu et bnei Amon vayatsuru al Rabbah. And they put a siege around Rabbah. The David Yoshev Yerushalayim. Anybody know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
He wasn't at the front.
Didn't go to the front. Look how, when you see it in the context of this parsha, it's so glaring when you see it here. And wait, let's continue going. Vayehi le'et ha'erev, it gets worse. The Malbim, had this not been the Malbim that pointed it out, I would have been hesitant to say it. I would have just thought that it's too modern of a critique of one of the greatest historical heroes of Jewish history. But the Malbim becomes unimpeachable as they get. You know, the Malbim spent his life fighting against the Reform and biblical critics and the Enlightenment period. That's the time of the period of Jewish history he lived. So he certainly understood the context in which he was taken. Vayehi le'et ha'erev, vayakam David mi'al mishkavo. So now it's the middle of the night. Vayitalech ha'gag beit ha'melech, and the rest of the story becomes history. So take a look at the Malbim. It's right underneath it. This is hinting to us that since David HaMelech was in his home, now I'm going to have to flesh this out a little. This all happened. It didn't happen because this is not a cause and effect. It's not because he went. Maybe it is. You know what? We'll figure it out together. So if you look in all the parshiot, all the prakim prior to Yud Aleph, David HaMelech is a non-stop fighting machine. Every single parak, this poor man is fighting with his people and winning and battling and running. And think of Sheol and think of Nov and think of his hiding. The men are very difficult life. So maybe you want to say, okay, he finally retired. He's taking it back a little. He's permitted to do it. Ashashayel tshuvat hashana. No, it was a nice time of the year. Lebal tachshov shloi eight ra'ui letzait mipnei akor v'hageshem. Amal letzait milchem. It was not cold. It was not raining. And don't say, well, this is a small war either. Why would a Magad have to go out and bother himself, an Ugdener? Why would he have to go out and trouble himself with such a small little battle? Shame for the mouth at Seipo Matma. Marki Shalachet Yoav Sar Tzavabet Tavadav. Shame Kol Sari Achayel. He sent everybody out. Vagiburim. Ved Kol Yisrael. He sent every single able person out to put a siege on Rabbah. This is not a serious enough conflict. Their king should have gone before him. And he wasn't even concerned about his people. How do you know he wasn't concerned about his people? Now, I can argue he got up in the middle of the night because he couldn't sleep. Okay.
Shalom Aleph.
Right.
Us older people, yeah, you get
up with that. Right. It happens. He's already semi-retired. Yeah, but he couldn't have been that old.
Exactly.
Yeah, but he couldn't have been that tired. He couldn't have been that old. Because Kim Mishkavo later on, because what happens when he gets to the roof? Well, Kfar Ruchazak, David, so aid Sudat Atzmo, Hayashin Atesha Sha'ut. So this is Chazal, and he was sleeping 9 hours. Ukshe Soed Sudat Malachim, Hayashin Ad Erev. He would sleep until the evening. Vim Kain Sada Sudat Malachim. This is a little bit of a stretch already. Nitaneg B'ta'anugim. He was making merry, festive. He was acting jocular and completely free of responsibility. Begam achakach lo asak besortzi rakalach litayel agag beit hamelach uvaze bali de'avera. And that's how we ended up sinning. Shira'a isha rochatzet below atzam inav mirod bara agam shira me'alagag bofen shutzrach l'chavei l'rod. He even went up there. Now, this is interesting because what is the mom saying? Is the mom saying it's a cause and effect? Or, yes?
Well, because he had too much free time. Almost,
yeah. Too much free time. So, anyone else? You think it's a cause and effect? Because I thought it was a correlation between the two, and as I started thinking about it a little more, I'm going to have a head start.
It's not, but Darsh Tamotam Havas got that with some months ago. It's not like a bollocks, like a car story. God takes you where you want to go. It's not. I don't see that.
I'm going to take it only because it's late. I think this is really worth an interesting conversation. I think it doesn't mean it's right. It's just because I have a head start on you on this because I saw this already 2 years ago the first time. Then I saw it. I read another book last year, and then I saw it again, and I hadn't seen it. It's the first time I've ever seen it. I saw it twice in 2 years. I think what happened is that this is symptomatic of a problem that manifested itself in going to the roof. In other words, his inability to connect in a meaningful way as a leader was manifested that he didn't go to war and that he slept with a soldier's wife. It wasn't that because he was home, therefore he neglected his duties. To the contrary, because what he did in his house demonstrated that he wasn't in the mindset of a leader. So it's not that there was a cause and effect, because he stayed home, he slept. That's not what happens in a country. Because his mind was not in the place of a leader, that was his demise. And we know that his mindset was a leader because he didn't go out and didn't fight the war with the Jewish people. So I thought that was an interesting interpretation.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to Asher Yotziim v'Asher Yiviyim, like Yehoshua, which I'm going to go back to right now. How could he be sleeping in it? And my grandfather, I remember, he left such a deep impression on me. My grandfather used to say that during the war, during the Holocaust, he used to, Aaron Cutler told him to go to shul on Shabbos by taxi. Because he said people would see Irving Bunim going from shul to shul in taxi. And by Rav Aaron Cutler's dictate, they would recognize that we have to wake them up out of their slumber. The Jewish people were being slaughtered. So he would say, one of his talks that he used to give was that you can't be drinking tea in China on Shabbos when our people are being slaughtered in Europe. There's no room for this type of engagement. There's something wrong with the mindset if a person can just disengage to the point that the people are at war. And they said Reb Chaim Shmulevich, I don't know if it's true, but Reb Chaim Shmulevich was supposed to have said to the boys in Mir during the Six-Day War that they weren't allowed to leave the Mir Yeshiva because every able-bodied male was either volunteering in a non-combat way or was volunteering in a combat way. And the boys in Mir were in the Mir Yeshiva. So Reb Chaim Shmulevich said, you're not allowed to leave the Mir. He kept them indoors the entire time. Of course, it was also, that's when war was happening. I don't know how much this is retrofitting. That it was the border in 67. Everybody knows the Mandelbaum Gate and Mea Sharm was the border of Jordan. So maybe it's a little bit of both. But just to end with Yehoshua, this is another Rashi. It's in Devarim. Vitzavet Yehoshua. This is what Moshe was told Yehoshua. Alatichot v'alamasot v'alaribot v'chezkeu v'amtzehu. Strengthen him bidvarecha. This is what you need to help Yehoshua with. Shalom yerach libo lomar kishem shene enash rabbi aleim
Kach sofi li'anash alein. Do you see Rashi's theme? Do you see the theme here? Rashi's theme was that he was bitter that he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael because of the people whom he led. In other words, Moshe blamed the followers for his demise. So Yehoshua was a smart man. And he said, oh, I'm going to lead these people? Well, look what happened to my Rebbe. He led those people, and he lost the most precious aspiration of his life. So Yehoshua wouldn't take the job. I'm sure if anyone ever changed jobs in life, you probably ask yourself, who had the job before me, and what happened? And if the person had a good experience, then that's good. If the person had a bad experience, a smart person would run away from a job like that.
Same thing happens to David. He loses the opportunity of building the Beit HaMikdash. He does all the motivation.
Yeah, right, does all the right things. Right.
And so I was trying to think, I was trying to remember whether they build, whether he hears that from God before
the story.
I think it's after.
And it comes after it, yeah.
But I think he's aware that there's
I wonder if I don't remember him seeing anyone bitter, but maybe I'll read a third book on David Mel. I didn't see what happens. There's an interesting genre that's coming out in David Mel. There's going to be a movie soon, I'm sure. Shalo yirach libo lomar kishem shenenash rabbi yilkach sofi liyanash lehem ki hu yavor im yavor lefnei Yinchalu. If you go in front of them, they will inherit the land. V'imlav lo yinchalu. You need to go out in front of the Jewish people. That's what Moshe told Yehoshua. So I thought I'd bring it full circle that Yehoshua is being appointed with the words of Moshe, who understood the true character of a leader. David HaMelech also did. I'm not taking it away from David. We know what kind of great warrior he was. But in his moment of weakness, it was manifest that he didn't go out in front of the Jewish people. And we'll stop here for now. So thank you.
Next week is Rabbi Hartz from Rabbi Moshe Bernstein. And then the week after is Rabbi Hartz.
Thank you very much.